The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum of Accelerated Government Strategies, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum from Accelerated Government Strategies, providing advisory consulting for innovative startups to help grow government revenue. Every week, Aileen and Gigi welcome Washington, D.C.'s most ambitious and influential female executives who are taking risks to engineer success and shape the future. Women of Washington on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Now your hosts, Aileen Black and Gigi Shum.
I'm Aileen Black.
And I'm Gigi Shum.
Our guest today is Gada Ijam. Gada is the Chief Information Officer at the National Railroad Passenger Corporation, or Amtrak, in Washington, D.C. During her tenure at Amtrak, Gada is the technology leader for Amtrak's transformational programs, customer experience, digital, operations foundation, and human capital transformation. She leads the strategic planning and executive governance of $200 million annual technology investment portfolio across Amtrak. Gada holds a Bachelor in Civil Engineering from Kuwait University and an MBA in Financial Management from Virginia Tech.
Thank you for having me.
So Gada, before we start talking about your career, can you share with us a little bit about where you're from and how you grew up?
Sure. So I would like to say that I am from the land of Mesopotamia, which is in the new country name is Iraq. I grew up in Kuwait, however. My parents basically migrated to Iraq, and then eventually I immigrated to the United States because this is where I want to be and this is what I call home. In terms of educational background, Elaine highlighted that I do have a civil engineering degree and a master's in business administration from Virginia Tech. Throughout my career, I have worked in Fortune 100 companies, except for the last 7 years where I intentionally joined Amtrak because I believe in Amtrak's mission. I believe in passenger rail's role in basically in building the infrastructure and building the transportation capability for the country. Amtrak is on a journey to run like a business and operate like a business, which is really exciting, and my background working in Fortune 100 company brings a lot of value to the table for the Amtrak leadership team.
Now, most of the women that we talk to on the show, when they think about their background, there was either a defining moment or a person in their life that had a lot of influence over who they were going to become. Who or what is that person or event in your life?
So I have to credit my parents for that. Those are the people that were closest to me and that actually inspired me and inspired who I am today. If I watch them, both of them are career professionals, highly educated individuals that had the passion and the work ethic to actually put their heart and soul in what they do and enjoy what they do and achieve a lot in life. They instilled that discipline in myself and my sister. We watched them as we were growing up, and very high integrity, very high work ethic, dedicated parents as well as dedicated individual professionals. And it was a really balanced view of life that we grew up in. And that's the thing that I carried forward with me as I raised my children.
So, Gada, I want to take it back a little bit to your beginning of your journey. You know, you majored in civil engineering and have had a long career in technology. What made you decide to pursue a civil engineering or a STEM degree? I mean, we don't have great numbers right now in that area.
I totally agree. I guess naturally I was inclined to math and science. I loved math and science, areas in high school and in middle school. And again, I aspired to be a professional. I aspired to grow in my career. And when I looked at the job market, I looked at the professional careers out there, I saw that the engineering, the medical field, the STEM field is definitely lacking in women. And I had that personality and that drive to do something that's outside of the box. And I joined the engineering degree. Civil engineering is not a typical degree for a female as well, because it typically includes being out there in a construction field, which I personally tried and was not successful at actually changing the mental model, because as soon as I walked out in the field, operations stopped because there's this one woman walking around with a hard hat and a jeans and a t-shirt trying to operate a construction field. So that was the conclusion, that it was too much of a battle to, you know, change that world. So I moved more into an MBA where I could operate more or pursue a career inside an office.
You know, U.S. statistics show, you're spot on, that women actually, STEM degrees are about 50%, but majority of them are in a different side of the sciences, biological type sciences.
Correct.
What fewer than 18% get computer science degrees, 18% engineering, you know, so the numbers are not going in that direction. But, you know, that's over 50 to 51% of the population are female. So we've got to start. I mean, it's just a numbers issue for the U.S. we won't be able to fill the jobs in those areas if we don't start attracting more females and minorities. So what would you recommend to try to change that, to try to get women and minorities, you know, into STEM degrees, especially on the hard sciences like engineering?
So I'll tell you what I personally do, and I think we can extrapolate it to a lot of us that are out there. I mean, I work with my community, with my neighbors, with the friends that I have and the relatives that I have. And if I see a young female that has that aptitude, we'll have a conversation. We'll have a conversation about what she would like to be. We'll have a conversation about how she enjoys the math and science. We'll have a conversation about what women can do in the workplace in a technical degree. I had a friend whose daughter was considering a career in information security. And if you look at that field, it's definitely highly dominated by male, you know, professionals. And she was very concerned and very afraid to pursue that career. She had the passion for it, but she was concerned and afraid to pursue it because she knew that she was going to be the only one, whether it's in class or whether it's in the office, that will have that specialty. And she was concerned that she's going to be the weird one or the odd one. I had a conversation with her and I totally encouraged her. And I said, there has to be somebody that starts that journey. And if you start that journey, there will be many that will follow you. She's now pursuing a master's degree in information security. She is a professional at IBM, and she's definitely enjoying what she's doing.
That's really wonderful. It sounds like that you think that kind of a grassroots sort of level approach
is the way to go. It has to be a one-on-one. Another example, my daughter is pursuing an engineering degree as well. Every semester, she comes and says, Mom, this is really, really hard. Do not expect me to have a 4.0 GPA. And I say, it's okay, because you will be extremely successful because you're going to be one of the few out there. And you will grow, you will learn, you will develop. Just ride it out, get through it. It will be rewarding later on.
So, Gada, speaking of technology, right, your whole career has been in technology. And you were at Intel for quite a while, and that's Aileen and I, both of our background is in technology. Mm-hmm. And so we know firsthand what male-dominated environments they are, especially when you were coming up the ladder and up the ranks. Did you experience any discrimination along the way, either overtly or, you know, unconscious bias as you were making your way up the corporate ladder?
Sure. I get asked that question a lot. And my simple answer is no, I have not faced discrimination. I have not faced, roadblocks throughout my career. And I would attribute it to a couple of things. One is maybe I was fortunate because I was in companies where they were actually open and encouraging the diversity. But the other factor, which I believe in that it's the main factor, is what is your internal belief in yourself? And what is your optics and perceptions around the environment around you? If you see yourself as a minority, if you see yourself as I'm a woman and they're males and therefore I am at a disadvantage, a lot of your actions and reactions and the words that you use and the way you present yourself will be reflected in that interaction, and therefore you will put yourself in a disadvantage. But if you truly believe in who you are and truly believe that your capabilities and your results will get you where you want to be, then that's how you will present yourself. And then the others will see you as an equal or as an equal capable professional. I totally believe in diversity in the workplace. And I usually do not say female versus male. It's more of how do we enable a diverse workforce and how do we encourage the right talented people to get to the right spots, whether they're male, female, different ethnic backgrounds, different minorities. It's just the right person for the right job and just enable them to grow and develop.
So, God, I want to go back to something you said earlier about when you walked out onto the construction, floor, and uh-huh. everybody stopped because there was a female there.
Yes.
And it from your statement, you internalized that action versus somebody saying or doing something. How you know, we're talking about, you know, finding that internal strength, having the confidence to pursue something that doesn't seem to look right, right? Mm-hmm. But it feels right.
Yeah.
So how could we have gotten to Gada and gotten her to not, you know, internalize that actions around you, not the words, but the actions?
Sure. In that situation, I think it would have been harder to convince me otherwise. A couple of factors. One, I was in Kuwait. So it's a country that is still developing in terms of gender equality in the workplace, especially X number of years ago. I'm still 29, by the way. So that many years ago, in a country that does not have that diversity aspect, it was not just me internalizing, it was me actually analyzing the facts around me and analyzing the probability of success around me and then making the decision. A lot of my decisions are gut feel as well as analysis of data and facts, and the combination leads me to the conclusion. A couple of times I failed following my gut and I found out that my gut was right. That's one thing that I learned as I progressed through my career. So I digressed a little bit, but going back to that question that you had, it would have been nothing that would have convinced me to change my mind, because I knew that the circumstances and the environment was not conducive for me to fight that battle.
Today in the studio, we're talking with Gada Ijam, CIO for Amtrak. Coming up, we'll hear Gada's thoughts on public sector versus private sector. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we're talking to Gada Ijam, CIO, Amtrak.
So Gada, you've worked extensively in the private sector. You talked about working for Fortune 100 companies. And then also now Amtrak, which I guess is, we call it quasi-public exactly. sector. So sometimes government gets a rap of being too big and bureaucratic and slow. What have you found to be the differences between private sector versus public sector?
I think in general, corporate governance is a key differentiating factor between private and public. Corporations drive for shareholder value. Their board of directors are focused on maximizing shareholder value, maximizing profits and revenues. And the drivers in terms of the leadership and the management and the governance structure is around that principle. What's fascinating about public sector entities, they're driven by their mission, whether it's government, whether it's quasi-government, and I've been talking to some nonprofit organizations, the mission is what drives and motivates people. And what you see in the halls at Amtrak, for example, is that passion to provide an excellent passenger rail service. It's that passion to provide the United States with an alternative mode of transportation, given the congested highways that we have. It's the passion for the customer and providing excellent customer experience. And it's a passion for the country and doing what's good for the country. And that's what drives people. But then, as I mentioned, Amtrak is running like a business, and we do look at our financials and we do look at our business results and make sure that we are spending the dollars wisely and we are generating the right revenue for the company.
You know, Gada, we interview a lot of women from the government and often ask them how they compete with private sector when it comes to recruiting And one of the things that they usually point to is the mission, and that that becomes kind of the secret weapon in terms of recruiting the best and the brightest out of colleges and things like that. Have you found that to be the case at Amtrak as well?
That is absolutely the case at Amtrak. The other factor, as I recruited a leadership team on my staff, is the fact that Amtrak is transforming itself to run like a business. And it depends on where you are, probably in the government. That may be another case for, excitement and, career development for people to say, you know what, we're going from this kind of an entity to an entity that operates and run more like a business and more like a private sector type company.
Today in the studio, we're talking with Gada Ijam, CIO Amtrak. Now, Gada, I got to tell you, I was on the internet doing research, and I read a great speech you gave, I think, for an IAC conference. Mm-hmm. And in the speech, you talked about partnership and the need that IT organizations, in particular at Amtrak, have with the line of business. In fact, your presentation really talked about the technical accomplishments your team has had. It actually really talked about how it helped to transform the business mm-hmm. and make it better. In this era of cloud, this is so important. It's also often, I found historically, of course, I'm still 29 for the last 20 some odd years, just like you. Often IT is looked at as the cost of doing business. So how did you help transform this partnership in this when people don't think about technology when they think of trains, right? So yeah. How did that work for you at Amtrak?
So a lot of CIOs, the legacy CIOs, let me call it that way. Maybe that may not be the right word to describe it. Think of themselves as technology only. The mindset that more of the digital CIOs or the innovative CIOs have is the technology is embedded in everything that we do. Look around us. Look at our lives, our personal lives, and technology is in everything we touch and breathe and operate. And therefore, the mindset that we have within the Amtrak IT organization is we are part of the business. We're not a back office, go in the basement, run the computers, but we need to understand the business. We need to understand what makes the business tick and how can technology enable the business to get the results that it needs to get. One of the key teams that I have is a customer relationship management team. Those people need to be embedded with the business to understand the business and then translate that into these are the technology solutions that allow you to improve customer experience, that allow you to recruit talent better, that allow you to engage via social media more effectively. So it's a different mindset. It's more of a run it like a business mindset rather than run it in the basement technology set of computers mindset.
You know, I travel a lot, and I have all the apps from all the airlines I use, and I travel a lot on Amtrak. I love Amtrak, but your app is fantastic. It really enables and empowers somebody on the train to figure out what time, if you lose track of what you're doing because you get to work on Wi-Fi, I can look exactly where I am. Perfect. And what time I'm going to go. Congratulations on that one because it's made me more productive. Do you find that the business is beginning to, capture that more and more? There's more ways of engaging with your customers this way, too?
So absolutely. Thank you for the feedback, first of all. But second, we do have a transformation roadmap for our customer experience. So it will become even more better from our clients and customers to ride Amtrak and to enjoy the trip within Amtrak.
Gada, I know that Amtrak got a new president a few months ago, and I think just last week he announced some pretty sweeping organizational changes. So the IT organization, if I understand it correctly, is going to be reporting into a new organization called Planning, Technology, and Public Affairs. So how will that change impact your role and your team's role?
Actually, it's an excellent change. The CEO believes that technology is a strategic enabler for the business. Back to Elaine's earlier comment about technology engagement with the business and transforming the customer experience. So the organization that IT will report into owns the strategic planning and the strategic the strategy for Amtrak, and therefore IT being part of that organization is a recognition that IT is a strategic, or technology is a strategic capability that Amtrak will continue to leverage to run like a business, to improve our operations and our services, and improve our customer experience.
You know, I wasn't quite sure as I looked at the change. It looked to me like I couldn't tell if it was a good or a bad thing for IT, because it looked like it is now sort of reporting a level down from where it was. Is that the case? Or
So we had a couple of changes. One of the earlier changes that the CEO had done as soon as he joined was to have the IT organization report into the CFO.
Okay.
The new place where IT belongs right now is a better place, because when you report to a CFO, you become a cost center. When you report to the head of planning and strategy, you become a strategic enabler.
Absolutely. That makes a ton of sense.
A big strategy that's coming up, Gada, is you're moving your headquarters out of Union Station to a new building. And I know you must be in the heart of the planning.
Yes.
And I know that you have a new website and it's improved, but I know with the move, you're probably going to be adding some additional functionality across the board for both your employees and for your external sites. Tell us a little bit about that.
So we're still in the early planning phases, so I don't have a lot of details, but it's definitely going to be more of a modern capability for us, or a modern building for us, where we will use technology to allow us to do more, remote connections with the different sites that we have, using the technology to allow employees to work on site or remotely. Again, we're still in the early planning phases in terms of the capabilities that we're building into the building. But as you said, Elaine, IT is heavily engaged with the real estate department to make sure that the needs and the aspirations of that new building and new residence for Amtrak has the newer technology.
You're uniquely qualified right now, not only from the IT perspective, but also from the construction background.
There you go.
Today in the studio, we're talking with Gada Ejam, CIO for Amtrak. Coming up, we'll hear about Gada's leadership style. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we're talking with Gada Ejam, CIO Amtrak. Now, Gada, I've read that you attribute your success to your leadership style, education, and diverse cultural background. So tell us, what do you mean by that?
Sure. So I'm very proud to say that as I was growing up, we traveled around a lot. My parents had a vision of making us be much more open-minded and see the world, to understand the different cultures and understand the different, diverse thoughts. Traveled around 25 countries, as I was growing up, which gave me a different perspective, which allowed me to look at the world as, one entity, and gave me that open-mindedness. I took that into the workplace. And if you look at specifically IT organizations, it's one of the most diverse organizations that can be. I mean, the Googles and the Apples and the Intels of the world, the high-tech companies are very diverse companies. And that travel helped me bring to the workforce or the workplace that open-mindedness and the appreciation of the different cultures and the different backgrounds that people brought, and be able to understand the subtle nuances of the interactions from the different cultural backgrounds that the workforce currently is made out of. So that's a key thing for me. The other one is definitely my education gave me the foundational principles, the foundational methodologies, the foundational practices that I can apply in my job. And then just my training as I was developing in my career, I was fortunate to have mentors. I was fortunate to have leaders that helped me and pushed me, to some uncomfortable areas for me to grow. and have excellent training and leadership development programs that, again, equipped me to be where I was, where I am right now.
So you talked about leadership and diversity of thought. You know, there's so many statistics out there right now that show that companies that have that mix are much more successful. So you've been very successful in your career. Mm-hmm. If I went to your staff and said, describe Jada's leadership style, what do you think they'd say?
I think the first word that they would describe me as is an influential leader and an inspirational leader. I tend to not get in their way. I tend to allow them to be who they are, and I tend to allow them to think freely. And when we're trying to make a decision, I usually bring my team together and we talk through the different perspectives and the different thoughts, and then come to the conclusion together. If we cannot come to the conclusion as a unit, I will make a decision, and I make it clear to them up front to say, you know what, we'll have a discussion, and if we can reach that final decision as a team, that's perfect, because then we all are bought into it and it's a collective input from the team. That's definitely better than just one thought into the process. But if we cannot come to that conclusion and we need to move on, as your leader, I will make that decision, but at least I've heard your input and feedback. So probably they will describe it more as an inclusive, inspirational, influential leader.
You have your undergraduate degree that you got in Kuwait and then an MBA from Virginia Tech. But I saw that you're now back in school.
Yes.
At Wharton.
Yes.
In the executive education program for business strategy and finance. So why is it important for you to be a continuous learner?
I think it's important for anybody in the professional field these days to be a continuous learner. The world is changing on us at a faster pace than it used to. Learning allows you to keep your mind fresh. It allows you to bring in new perspectives and new topics to your work, to your team, to the company that you work for. It allows you to think of solving the problems in different ways, and therefore you get better results. It allows you to compare what you're doing to what everybody else is doing and make it better. So continuous learning is absolutely important for anybody in an industry or in a workplace, because, again, things are changing. One conversation I was having actually with my children, they were, again, talking about how difficult it is to study these days. And I asked them, why is it more difficult? And their answer was, you know, it stunned me. Said, think of when you were going to school and where science was and how much theories and findings and discoveries were there when you were going to school versus where we are today, and how much discoveries and how much science and math and, you know, and physics have advanced during that duration. And that's what we need to study, is the current level of physics and science and math, which have progressed. So there's lots of things that are being uncovered and discovered by scientists and mathematicians and just general innovative people that we need to continue to learn. Otherwise, we'll be stuck in the 20 years ago knowledge.
Of course, some of the technology has helped them to make it easier to study.
Of course.
Back in the day, I don't recall that we had the internet that we could find information.
That may be
on
a good thing, because it's a distraction sometimes.
That's true. That's true.
Earlier, you mentioned a mentorship, that, you know, leadership that you had worked for before were really helpful in helping you find your way, create your career, and plot your strategy for the success that you have found. Is mentorship more important in a male-dominated fields like technology?
Again, back to my philosophy, is I don't look at it as a male versus female, lens. I look at it in terms of capability. So in my career, as I was growing in my career, you get to certain spots in your career and you've developed certain skills, but you need to grow in other skills. And the way I've maneuvered my mentorship path is, okay, I now know how to manage teams, but I do not know how to present to executives. How can I acquire that skill, and who is best at executive presence and executive presentations, And then I go seek out those people, look around in the organization and find the person that does it best. And either I go situational mentorship and say, Eileen, you're great at presenting at board of director type meetings. I need to grow in that area. Would you be willing to work with me on that? So that's more of a very tactical topic-based mentorship. Or you just say, I want to be, when I was growing up to be a CIO, it was a much broader portfolio of skills that I needed to develop. So I had to choose mentors that allowed me to grow in that broader portfolio of skills.
I love that approach because, first off, you need to realize that if there's somebody you want to be your mentor, they're probably pretty darn busy.
Mm-hmm.
And by being prescriptive and putting together a plan, it makes it easier for people actually to then want, be able to help you.
Absolutely. You never go to a mentorship session without an agenda. You never go without a focused objective because, again, to your point, Eileen, they're busy. They have very, busy schedules, and they have their own set of challenges and deliverables that they need to focus on. So they are investing time in you, and therefore you want to respect that time.
Any best advice you ever got?
One that's more recent. As I became CIO of Amtrak, one of my mentors said, you need a much broader portfolio of skills now that you're in this seat. My recommendation is to build your personal board of directors. So it's a set of three or four mentors that they get together, they bring different perspectives to the table, and you actually pursue a diverse set of perspectives. And then you go in every quarter and have a discussion with them saying, here's where I'm at, here's where I want to go, here are some of the challenges, and have the board of directors, just like a company board of directors, but it's more, these are people that are invested in you and in your career progression. I'm going to pursue that.
So, Gada, when I read about your background, what was clear to me is that you have been involved in as many organizational transformations as technical transformations.
Yep.
And recently, you led the centralization of the IT organizations within Amtrak. So can you tell us a little bit about that? I mean, I know better than to ask which is harder. It's always the people changes,
yes.
That are the harder changes. But what have you kind of found to be the biggest challenges as you've led organizational transformation, and how have you overcome them?
The challenge is people, right? People, when people feel insecurity, people tend to act and react in a totally different way, in an unpredictable way. So that's the challenge. The sub-challenge behind that is, as a technology person or technology people or engineers, communication and engaging people is sort of not a natural inclination for us, because we look at a problem, we look at a solution, we look at hardware, software, right? So the challenge for an IT organization driving a transformation is to actually think about people, think about org change management, think about communication, and make it a priority and make it part of what you do in order to ease that tension, in order to ease that insecurity or uneasiness that people feel. We're going through the centralization of technology within Amtrak, and as a leader, I'm being deliberate about, have we communicated? Have we talked to people? Have we reached out to people and made sure that they are at ease? We're building a change management and a communication plan as part of that integration plan to make sure that we're deliberate, again, to engage the people. People are hard, change is hard, and the intention is to actually do something about it, not let it fester and let it grow into the negative side.
Today in the studio, we're talking with Gada Ejam, CIO Amtrak. Coming up, we'll hear what Gada likes to do when she's not working. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Find out what makes federal executives and industry executives tick. Women of Washington, federalnewsradio.com. Search Women of Washington.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we're talking with Gada Ejam, CIO Amtrak. Gada, we've talked about your journey and you've achieved such an incredible amount of success. Let's flip that around and talk about organizations that are struggling to find and promote women and minorities into leadership positions at the highest level. There's been a recent study by McKinsey that talks about women actually opting out at the mid-level manager level. It's a concern that's shared by many public agencies. Both, we had the Secretary of the Air Force in here talking about having to work to create programs to keep mid-level career service members in. Private sector has had this challenge. It seems to be a work-life balance. So what advice would you have? How do you deal with work-life balance?
I don't know if I'm the best example for work-life balance, but I'll tell you what I do in order to achieve that. I definitely have to take time away, unplug and take time away. A couple of things that I do is yoga, exercising, and funny enough, if I tinker around in the kitchen, that's a stress reliever. And it could be I'm baking, it could be I'm cooking, or it could be as simple as just washing the dishes, because washing the dishes just take your mind off of anything that's technology, or you're not hooked to your phone and you're not hooked to your computer. And that's just walking away from things. The other piece is I do schedule regular time off. It doesn't have to be a long vacation. It's small increments of time off, again, just to get away from everything. When my children were younger and, I was just raising them, when I'm with them, I'm with them. And there were hours that it's like I am not responding to emails. I'm not responding to phone calls. And I had to be deliberate about it. With my team or with my leadership, that this is time off, this is family time. We had dinner together, and that was required as a family. So again, you have to make it a deliberate thing. It cannot just haphazardly happen, especially in a world where we're connected 24/7. It's really hard to drop that phone and stay away from email or text messages. So just be deliberate about it. Definitely exercising helps, just from a stress relief, from a brain relief, from a just create that inside happiness. So that's what I do. I love to travel as well. So that's something that I do on a regular basis. I volunteer for rides, bike rides, again, deliberate things that takes me away from the day-to-day churn.
It sounds like you've been able to handle it very well. So I don't know why you say you're not a good example of work-life balance, because it sounds like you're doing a great job. But many of the women that we've talked to have at some point of their career been faced with a difficult decision that largely comes down to priorities and and what they were going to do. Maybe and it may be that at that particular time they put their career first, or that they put their career on the back burner, or just went in a different direction. Did you have any times like that in your career that you were faced with just a choice or a difficult situation?
I don't think any woman would not face that decision in their lifetime. The simple answer is yes, I faced those times, those moments where it's like, okay, make a choice. I made the choice that I will invest in my career and find solutions and alternatives to allow me to do that. One of the key things that I would give as a piece of advice, find a support structure. And support structure could be as simple as you have a friend that can come in and watch something for you or take care of something for you while you're doing this. Or you have a nanny, or you have a family structure, or you have a spouse that is supportive of your career development. So I think the key thing is if you are able to find a support structure type solution, the answer cannot only be I have to quit my career in order to balance the other part of the equation. Again, I may not be the best example, but when I faced those situations, the options were not either this or that. The thinking is, how can I solve it and enable myself to continue to drive my career forward? With that said, I did deliberately take a step away. If you notice in my background, I moved from a high-tech industry to a company, a global high-tech industry company, Intel, to a company that is more national. So when I moved from Intel to Freddie Mac, that was a deliberate decision to say, I need to be here in this country with my children versus travel the globe for my job. It was a sort of a lateral move for me, but it was a deliberate move. I knew I was going to step away from a really big, prominent company to a big company, but more on a national level. I didn't give away my career aspiration. I did not give away my career growth, but I took a step aside in order to allow me to have that work-life balance. So it's more of how do you find the right solution without giving it away or giving it up?
And so that obviously worked out well for you from a career perspective, too, because you continued to progress. But at the time that you made that decision, were you worried that it was going to somehow hamper your career development?
Honestly, I was not, because I knew it was the right decision for me in totality, me and my family. So it was the right decision. And I knew that with my motivation, with my focus, I will be able to make up that, right? So I was just positive about it. I did not think back that it's a bad move. I just thought it was the right balanced move for us at the time. And just like you said, I'm better off today.
I got it. I really enjoyed talking with you today. I've learned so much myself through hearing about your journey. But I got to ask you a question. If you were to go back in time when you graduated from college, and what three pieces of advice would you give yourself to assure that you could be successful in today's world?
So the three pieces of advice are going to be more on the work-life balance. So the first one is take care of yourself. Just like you both described, many women give up taking care of themselves in order to pursue a career, and that's not the right answer, because there will be a point in time where you'll find out that you need to take care of yourself and you're forced to do that. So I would tell me, take care of yourself, take time for you, play more. Life is fun. Career will happen with the focus and the dedication, but life moves really fast, so play more. And the last one is, walk away sooner if there is an ugly situation that you're in. And just cut your losses and move on. There were times where I was much more too patient and try to work the solution and work the problem, and it was a problem that's not solvable. So walk away sooner.
Today in the studio, we've been talking with Gada Ejam, CIO of Amtrak. I'm Gigi Shum.
I'm Aileen Black.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum, founders of Accelerated Government Strategies. Learn more about AGS and the work they do to help accelerate your business plans for public sector at excelgovstrat.com. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Women of Washington, Wednesday afternoons at 1 on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.